He really didn't mean it.
7:30, we'll get going. Oh, here comes Nathan.
Nathan's here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh?
I can move. I can move. I don't want to take your spot. You aren't supposed to be here, sir.
I got home, I don't know, this yesterday. Sorry. Sorry about that.
I'm happy to see you.
Yeah, I made that scramble to get here. Okay, sir.
Well, all right, now I'd like to call over this regularly scheduled meeting of the Board of Commissioners and Community Development Corporation. It's a couple minutes after 7:30 on March 11th, 2020. Roll call, Commissioner Mueller.
Here.
Commissioner Vlasic.
Here.
Commissioner Bassalone.
Here.
Commissioner DeBeer, not here. Commissioner McCarville.
Here.
Commissioner Bevan.
Here.
Mr. Byrne.
Here.
Mr. Fitzgerald.
Here.
And in place of Council Lake, you have Council Villegas.
Here.
And Administrator Squires.
Here.
Do we have a motion to confirm the agenda?
So moved.
Second. So motion by Commissioner McCarville and second by Commissioner Vlasic. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
If that's unanimous, the agenda is confirmed onto the consent agenda, which includes the minutes of the February 26, 2020 regular meeting and the 2020 administrator's report. We have a motion on that. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Vlasic.
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes of the February 26 meeting and approve the February 2020 administrator's report.
Second.
So a motion by Commissioner Vlasic and a second by Commissioner Fitzgerald. Is there any discussion? If not, we can just do a voice vote on this. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That sounded unanimous as well. The consent agenda is approved. On to the legislative update. Scott, you want to join us?
Take the hot seat.
Yeah. You might want to scoot as far away from Ash.
Good move.
No, we're buddies. Can't say for others, but we're buddies.
So a couple of updates to report on. Really two bills primarily impacting urban renewal, and then the ongoing discussions with property tax caps, freezes, budget freezes, and in the interim committee. It's going to be scheduled for summer for property tax review. First, a bill we discussed earlier that dealt with commissioners and the ability to exercise the right to be in the domain. That bill made it through the Senate. It had some amendments to it. They were refresh your memory. The language basically laid out that unless an urban renewal board is appointed or elected, they can only act in an advisory role to an elected body if you're going to use any of the domain powers. So in Meridian's case, if you have property that you want to condemn, city council would effectively have to do that. You would have to play an advisory role to the city council to condemn that property since this board isn't elected. Urban renewal boards that are elected, which we don't have any that I am aware of, we could do that without any advice or without an advisory role to the city council. So that bill's gotten out of the Senate. There's no scheduled hearing for it on the House side. It's been there for a little over a week, and typically we've seen that hearing scheduled at this point, so I'm not sure if the chairman's going to hear that bill in hearing or not. So I am having a few conversations with some of the committee members about that bill and the chairman as well to see if he intends to schedule a hearing for it, and I'll let you know if that's going to happen. And again, that's a pretty benign issue since so few of the urban boards ever use it in the domain power. The other piece of legislation that yesterday actually was out of the Capitol came out of committee it's already gone to the House. It's a redraft of an earlier version dealing with highway districts, and any new urban renewal districts that are going to be formed after July 1st of this year would have to go to the highway district that overlaps it or that fits in, and would need to get their basically consent or agreement in order to have the highway districts in grant participate in the district. So primarily targeted towards Ada County ACHD, but there are some other counties outside of Boise area that have some impact. Initially, didn't think it would be much of an issue given the status of where you're going on when the new district is being created. Sounds like that could be changing soon. So if this bill becomes law, which it's already passed the House, then any new district that you form after July 1st, you have to negotiate basically the inclusion of ACHD into that district if you want to have that TIF participate in your funding. So that will be a concern. I think that's something that a lot of every district now starting to look at to realize what that impact would be. So I don't know if there's more discussion actually you want to have on that this morning, but it'll go to the full Senate for a vote in the next several days. Most likely will pass. There was a few dissenting votes yesterday, but I would expect that bill to get off the Senate floor and down to the governor's office. So that's something to keep in mind as we start planning new districts in the years to come. That will impact what you're doing. So, next issue, just to make you aware of, and I think this probably has more potential to have long-term impacts, is what the legislature is considering as they are developing their framework for what's called an interim committee. We've had multiple interim committees that have dealt strictly with urban renewal over the last 5-6 years. And we've always been able to get a decent outcome with respect to what legislation is going to do and how it's going to change the district. This time it's being approached a little differently from a property tax perspective. You probably heard there's big debate right now on either freezing city budgets or county budgets or capping at a 4% rate and then forming a committee to review and look at all of the property tax districts and how they're impacting the rising property tax that a lot of folks are seeing around the city. It's pretty well known, and there are several members of the legislature that have a very specific interest in really starting to look at urban renewal again and its impact on increasing property taxes. And one of the co-chairs of this interim committee is pretty, I think, on the record stating that he's very, very interested in I want to kind of choose my words carefully since we're on record, but he's very interested in looking at urban renewal with a fresh set of eyes and whether or not there's a real need for it as we see it today.
That was really smooth, Scotty.
So I think that probably represents a different scenario than what we've seen in the past, where you just have legislation that kind of ultimately kind of chips away at some of the power like we've seen recently. There could be there's going to be a greater effort, more concerted effort to really put it under the microscope, along with other taxing districts, even though the rural is not a taxing district, but to put it under the microscope and start to examine the efficacy of what urban renewals do versus the potential property tax relief that could be granted. So I would certainly advise you to stay involved in that. We don't know what that composition that committee will look like yet. Once the session's done, the speaker and pro tem will appoint members from the body, and they'll start developing their members. The current legislation that we're seeing move right now regarding the property tax cap, I'm sorry, the budget cap, has a 3-year window in it. Initially, we were talking it was going to be a 1-year freeze. Now we've moved away from a 1-year freeze on budgets to a 4% cap for 3 years while they try to evaluate what's the best path forward. So that's a much longer period of time where potentially greater impacts will occur at the districts that have budgets. County commissioner sort of be frozen at the current levies as far as their ability to exceed that among municipalities and other taxing district budgets are going to be capped at 4%. They aren't going to be able to use the foregone. New construction is not going to be a part of the 4%. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they navigate this. And obviously, many of the taxing districts and cities and counties are opposed to what's going to be forward in urban districts as well. So, I mean, with that, that's a sort of a broad overview, but I think the imminent threats right now probably reside within the legislation that we just talked about and the ongoing committee to review all these different taxing districts. So, happy to answer any questions, or for Ashley, she's been involved in these committees as well.
The only thing I would add, just to put it in perspective in terms of the ACHG impact bill for fiscal year 19, I think I said this at the last meeting, it's a little over 10% of our budget. And so it had been about $150,000 last year out of our budget. The issue that Stephen Price, legal counsel for ACHG, tried to hang his hat on is that, you know, the increment that we receive should go should knowingly be going to transportation projects. I think we can demonstrate over the at least the last 10 years that I've been doing this position that we exceed that increment that we receive towards transportation and sidewalk improvements and that sort of thing. But it's directed at CCDC. We're paying the price for their Central Bench District, and that is all it's directed at. They didn't even mention Meridian in any way. So because of that, this is why this is coming up.
Yeah, I do think that's a good frame of reference. If this would have been in place, what you would have potentially lost or not had access to is $150,000. So as you evaluate your new districts going forward in the coming years, assuming this becomes law and it's not changed, you know, in future years, if you are able to reach an agreement with ACHD in terms of participation in the TIF, you'll be able to see what that is. Ironically enough, what I think has been lost in this conversation is the fact that the money that is being used for road improvements, right? I mean, it's not like that money isn't utilized for improvements. And you know, it seems to be glossed over, I think, at a high level with a lot of the discussions that we were hearing yesterday. But in fact, I would argue that CCDC would use those monies for road improvements. I mean, it's very much a part of what they do. So.
And Mr. Chairman, just to add on to that, you know, ACHD would not be allowed, even if we were able to negotiate an agreement, they would have to renew that every single year. So just depending on, so that's not guaranteed over the life of the district then. That is an every year you would have to come back and negotiate. And so there is no guarantee in good faith that they would negotiate in the first place, because there's no requirements or sideboards in this legislation for them to do so. And secondly, even if you were to able to get an agreement 1 year and the election changed the members, it's not good policy. It's horrible policy.
Right. It gets done without, like, it's not
going to matter. If it gets off the Senate floor, I would expect the governor, you know, I haven't heard, but I think he's probably in favor of legislation to do this. So, one thing to mention as well with that. So current districts have the ability to expand. So if this existing district decided, you know, next year that you wanted to expand your boundaries, the law today allows you to expand by 10% of your current area. And so that new expanded area, that 10%, would be subject to a negotiated agreement with ACHD on whether or not you were going to utilize their TIF in that new area. So that's obviously a problem for any district that exists that's expanding. You know, a few years ago, we did dial that back down on the expansion side, right, 10%. So that's something to consider as well. And then also with new areas that expand, I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, the boundaries change, right? So you're getting a TIF within the area that already exists, but how are you prevented from utilizing those existing monies in the area? I guess I don't know where the boundaries are, the borders are, on how that works. So I think there's a lot of questions from a practical matter, even on implementation. So I'm not sure that it was well thought through. One of the problems we saw also is this is a new bill. It came out of a special committee on the House side of Public Ways and Means. They had a hearing to introduce the bill, but then the bill never had a public hearing. It went straight from that committee to the House floor. So it kind of bypassed the entire public hearing process, which we would have weighed in already, because when we met 2 weeks ago, you know, we were all talking about one district. Because of how that bill moved, we didn't have that chance last week to get in front of the committee on the House side to state our objections or to report them. So unfortunately, that's how we got to where we are today.
Commissioner Bassel, did you?
I have three questions.
Okay.
I don't mind the last of all of that. Let's keep coming back. You answered one of my questions. This is the first we have heard about the ACHD amendment to that bill. So it was done in a very fast-track way, which didn't allow for public comment, which if I were a part of the public right now, I'd be very concerned about that the legislature is not allowing the public to weigh in on a bill that affects them. My second question has to do with our portion of our tax increment from ACHD is very minuscule compared to their total budget. So I'm curious, the city of Meridian, proportionally, how much do we actually pay into our taxes going to ACHD, and how much are we getting back? Because I would assume, this is just an assumption, that we're getting back a smaller percentage than our taxpayers actually pay into ACHD. So that is a concern, and that should have been brought up. I don't know if anyone did bring it up. Also, in terms of election of Urban Renewal Board members, is there any Urban Renewal District in the state of Idaho that elects its Urban Renewal Commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, Dan, I guess take the last question first. The answer is no. No boards that I'm aware of today are elected. They can choose to. I mean, it's an option.
But at this point, nobody does it because we defer to the city council as the elected body, right?
They are often referred to as the elected body. Plus, the intent and the spirit of what urban renewal districts do. The reason there's not elections is, you know, it's a job that has always been a thing that you want to have appointed members. You're not out seeking elected office. Right, you're serving your community by being appointed. So there's been multiple attempts over the years to require that. We've always opposed it, and you know it's been pretty tightly held standard that we're not going to require boards to be elected.
And very honestly, an elected Urban Renewal Commission would take authority away from the city council, right?
That's okay. One of the arguments.
So you know, we're talking about local control. Right?
So that's why we have the cops like Trek sitting on your porch.
Right. I mean, you know, that's why we get our input from the city council member. But also in terms of the property tax legislation, Captain, first of all, urban renewal districts, as far as I know we don't collect property tax. We're not a taxing agency. All we do is get an increment from those taxing agencies. So if those taxing agencies are capped in some way, in effect, we're capped too, because we get a percentage of theirs. So why would property tax capping be associated with urban renewal districts in any way when we don't have that authority?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Bassalone, that's been the argument and discussion I've had with Senator Rice, that urban renewal districts aren't taxing districts. They receive money from taxing districts, but he'll tell me that I'm missing the point, and that the point is that by having urban renewal districts, it's drawing from property tax, so it's freezing. I understand how it works, and you guys as well. So it's a nuanced argument with some of these other members that are looking at this. And quite honestly, it doesn't necessarily have to have an equal correlation to it. This is something else is driving the urban renewal piece to this with respect to the property tax.
Well, it's, first of all, I'm going to be very blunt, it's not honest. It's not an honest assessment of taxing. And without that, you know, I mean, it's fine. We live in the recession 7-8 years ago when I was on this board. We lost like $200,000 of increment because the tax was reduced during those times. If the tax is reduced by a taxing agency, we just get less money and we live with it and we budget accordingly. So to put or to imply that there's a property tax cap on urban renewals is not an honest statement. That's my comment.
Do any of the other board members have questions for Scott? Okay,
so on the ACHD bill, does it still have to go through committee on the Senate, or is it out of committee on the Senate?
Mr. Chairman, that was yesterday.
So that was the one answer. So it is just going to the floor. It's not going to be one of the ones that doesn't want to make it to committee. Because they're done, right? Aren't they wrapped?
They're close. They'll be done in a couple of weeks. That's their projection.
I mean, totally done, but aren't they not here? I thought they weren't here in the committee anymore.
They're, Mr. Chairman, they have discretion on what they choose to hear at this point. I know the pro tem on the Senate side has given direction to his committee chairs to shut down your committees. So, but this bill came through the Senate committee yesterday. So I think my understanding from this chairman is that this is probably his last week of hearing bills. So I don't think he'll hear very much more than that on this week.
Well, if there's no more questions or comments from board members, Scott, thank you.
Okay.
One of the more content-filled updates you've given us.
It's been interesting the last couple of weeks. Yeah. Lots of things are moving quick. Yeah. So,
thanks for staying on top of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, on to the presentation and discussion of the draft First Amendment to the Meridian Revitalization Plan to de-annex certain parcels. Bill, would you care to join us?
And board members, these are separate from the items 6 and 7 are separate from your packets.
Do you want to kick this off?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, as we had in our last meeting, the eligibility report, that was step one in this process of the de-annexation and then the ultimate creation of a new urban renewal district. City Council unanimously approved that eligibility study last night. Thank you, Commissioner Berndt, for that. So what you have in front of us today is the draft of the First Amendment to the Revitalization Plan for this item, and then the next item is the draft of the Union District, so the new Urban Renewal District specific plan. We wanted to give the board some time to absorb this. We do have Council Lakey's comments. We're going to take in what is stated today, and then I have some comments as well, and put that into one document in order to get that back to Phil and his team. And then this will be back in front of us at our next board meeting for formal approval. It'll be in front of the City Council on, I believe, April 16th, if I'm remembering that date correctly.
What was that?
April 16th. And I will turn it over to Phil and his team.
Jeremy, Phil,
before you start, maybe both of you.
Yeah,
so everybody
I'm Phil Kushlado, Kushlado Associates. Then we came to and shepherd the process of the de-annexation and creation of the district. Megan Conrad, General Counsel, with Ian Burke, who basically brings here. And we'll ask her to walk through the plan elements that she has drafted. My role in this stage has been the development of the economic feasibility part of that, which is the numbers pages in the document. And so after she's walked you through the various elements of the de-annexation legislation and how that works, and then we'll talk a little bit about the new plan, which basically brings the power forward in the fine area. And then we can talk a little bit about the numbers, because there's one specific issue that we'll need some input from the board on as we move forward, and that's why we're wanting to have this early conversation, because this is concrete yet, or concrete at least is not set up yet. And so we need some conversation about these one issues that I'll point out to them.
So just for the board, we're going to cover 6 and 7 on the agenda at the same time, is that correct, Ashley?
That is correct. Okay.
Also, I'd like to introduce Shelley Rodriguez, who's back here, who's helping me get through this whole process in a timely manner, because our timelines are short, so it's important that we have all hands on deck and we get some pretty tight timelines.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today and talk with you about this First Amendment and the new plan. Please feel free to ask questions as we go through this presentation. I will, just for point of clarification, Ashley, you had mentioned a date in April 16th. I missed what that meeting date was.
That was the city council portion of reviewing the eligibility plan, or excuse me, the feasibility or the specific plan.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Sorry, not enough coffee this morning.
So as the de-annexation map and legal have been prepared, they were submitted to the State Tax Commission just to make sure the map and legal closed pursuant to their requirements. They also will be submitted to the GIS mapping team of the county just to make sure there aren't any issues flagged at that level. But the approach that has been taken in the First Amendment is to pick out the sections of your existing 2002 revitalization plan and decide where there may be amendments necessary in order to accommodate this de-annexation. This is not contemplated to be an amended and restated 2002 plan, but really intended to be narrowly focused just to address the de-annexation, the 16 acres that we're talking about here today. So on page, I probably do have the same page numbers as you. Page 2, there's a background section. And this helps identify the discrete scope and purpose of what we're doing here. I do want to call your attention, and this is a good piggyback to what Mr. Turlington was talking about in the current legislation that's working its way through the legislature. In the normal course, when a project, and I know you know this, but when a project area terminates, I think there is sort of this general misperception out there that the revenues that have been coming to an urban renewal agency simply reverse course and start flowing back to the taxing districts. And what really happens is when a project area terminates, all of that increment value is then put on the new construction roll. And then the overlapping taxing districts are able to, under current law, tap into that new construction value to increase their budget capacity. So it's not an automatic just dollars flowing back. There has to be action taken by each overlapping taxing district to increase their budgets. So the same process really happens in a de-annexation, because we're putting those, that increment is now available for the overlapping taxing districts. That process is somewhat set out in the second paragraph here, and I just wanted to call your attention to the fact that we might have to make some tweaks to that as a result of what's happening right now. I don't know if that value is going to actually go on the new construction goal or not. That being said, based on Phil's analysis, the potential revenue from that additional value is de minimis. So there's also, my understanding is the 2002 district may have some overlapping debt or bonded indebtedness. And we need to make sure that we take a look at any of the bond covenants and determine if there's any consent or just anything that we would need to submit to the lender to show that this is not going to have a real impact on the revenue flow from that debt. So that's the highlighted section in there, just requiring some clarification. The last paragraph there is to enforce the point that this is a pre-2016 plan that we are amending, and so therefore is grandfathered in and is not at risk of re-triggering any base assessed value to the current assessed value as a result of this action. So in any event, the legislature with the changes in 502903A, which is the base reset provision, expressly accepted out deannexations from triggering a base reset. So under any scenario, this should not impact that in any way if you're 2002 plan. So jumping into the provisions that have been amended on page 3, we just start with a few definitions going forward. Obviously, this can be referred to as an amended project area because it's your full area, less the de-annexed area. And your attachment 5, your existing economic feasibility study, has not been amended. But however, there is a new attachment 5A that simply discusses or identifies what the lost revenue from pulling that area out will be. The list of attachments has been revised in the plan, and as well as those references that are in section 100. If you go to page 4, there's an amendment to section 102.1. That's the section of the 2002 plan that walks through the statutory steps that got you through that process. And so this is updating that section to add all of the steps that we're jumping through in terms of this First Amendment. And as you know, this First Amendment has to go through all of the same statutory steps and requirements that a new plan would have to go through. There's just a slight tweak to the amendment of section 200 of the plan, which is the description of the amended project area. It defines the project area to be what it is, and then it identifies on the next page that there's going to be this de-annexation area coming out. We get into paragraphs 8 and 9 that amend section 504 to the plan. And if we look at 8A, in the 2002 plan, there's a provision in there that includes the revenue allocation financing provision. This is just specifying for those de-annex parcels to those parcels that the revenue allocation provision is going to stop effective January 1, 2020. Paragraph 9A. Identifies the consultants that prepared the attachment 5A, so that reference is in there. Paragraph 10A reaffirms that the de-annexation of the parcels pursuant to this First Amendment is not substantially going to change the analysis that was prepared in the original economic feasibility study. And I think we also want to make clear in this de-annexation that there's no intent to extend the life of the existing 2002 project area. So in paragraph 12, section 800, this de-annexation has no impact on the duration of your existing plan. And then 13, 14, and 15 just introduce the new attachments, which will be the 1A is the new legal description for the de-annex area, 2A is the map of the de-annex area, and then 5A shows the impact of the de-annex parcels coming out. And all of those attachments follow. So with that, happy to answer any questions about the First Amendment.
Ashley, Victor, you said Todd had reviewed it and had comments. And do you want to go over those at this point, or
I think we'll talk about the, we'll gather all the comments today. We'll take that back, put it in one document. We'll sit down with leadership on Tuesday, go through with that, and then we'll present those at the next meeting, and we'll send them out beforehand as well.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Just to keep this moving along.
Questions, bless you. Questions from any board members on that? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I guess just to highlight on that chapter 5A, we have looked at what the dollar impact of just the application is. It's about $12,000 here out of your total $2 million budget. So that's the reason we've concluded it, and everybody's agreed that that's a minimus amount. Most of the property is either pretty much deteriorated, not producing much property tax anyway, or it's tax exempt. So there's not a big fiscal impact here at all. Sorry.
Thank you for that. So go ahead. Do you want to move on to the new urban renewal plan for the
yep.
district?
Chair, commissioners, before you in your packet, you do have the urban renewal plan for the Union District Urban Renewal Project. I know you are not unfamiliar with this process and have several project areas, including the 2002 plan and 10 mile. So just we'll hit on the highlights within the body of this document, and then we'll really turn it over to Phil to walk through the economic feasibility analysis. In your packets, there are several options. So there are five attachments to this plan. You'll have the, just as a 30,000 overview of what you're looking at. You'll have the boundary map and the legal description, which will be the same as the area that's been de-annexed from the 2002 plan. Attachment 3 identifies properties that may be acquired by the agency. Attachment 4 is a map depicting expected land uses and current zoning in that area. And attachment 5 is the economic feasibility study. And just a reminder that the economic feasibility study in this plan in and of itself is not a contract. It's a basic framework to implement the projects and improvements identified in the plan. And the economic feasibility study, which Bill will get into in detail, is really just to show that there are sufficient dollars to cover the improvements that are contemplated. So section 100 of the plan, it does identify in the first page what the elements have to be in an urban renewal plan that are set forth in Idaho Code section 502905. I think it's always helpful for ease of reference to have that in the planning document so that people don't have to jump back and forth with the code book. So all of these, the statement describing the total assessed value of the base, of your collective base from your other project areas and the anticipated base value of this area and the total taxable value of the city, that analysis you will find in here. The statement listing the kind, number, of location of the public works projects, that's really addressed in section 300, section 500, and also in the economic feasibility study. Economics feasibility study is attachment 5. The list of estimated project costs is generally found in the economic feasibility study. The fiscal impact statement, that is addressed in section 500. And if we look at what the fiscal impact is to an affected taxing district, it really is the loss of the ability to access the new construction role in the short term. That's the impact. So that is written out in the plan and isn't really necessarily addressed. It's addressed in the economic feasibility study to the extent they're showing new construction and new value going in the ground. There is a description of the methods of financing, and this plan includes the termination date, which you're familiar with, which is found in section 800. Somewhat the same as what was done in the background section of the First Amendment. There's also some text in bold here on page 2 that does the opposite in a way. It identifies that this is a post-July 1, 2016 plan, and so that there are some risks of a base reset should the plan be modified by ordinance of the city council. And so that language is in here, as well as the fact that there are a number of exceptions to the base reset requirement. And one is to support the growth of an existing or commercial or industrial project, or ministerial or technical changes. And those two exceptions have been specifically called out in here. Just to provide some clarity as to where we sit in the world of when this plan is adopted and what statutes apply. And then on page three, this provides a real 30,000 foot overview as to what the goals of this plan are. The next several sections are very consistent, I think, with what you're used to seeing. Section 101 talks about the general procedures of the agency and how the open meeting laws apply, and what the statutory obligations overlay in the agency are. Section 102 sets forth the procedures and the hoops that will need to be jumped through in order to get this district stood up. Section 103 provides a fairly lengthy history and current conditions of the area, so I definitely encourage you to review that section and make sure that it's accurate. So section three, I want to call your attention to page nine. Section 300 is the proposed redevelopment actions. This is an attempt to identify with some specificity as to what we believe the improvements may be within the boundaries of the project area. So those are identified here. So that's another section that you may want to focus on and make sure we get everything. Section 300 in general also addresses the property, the owner participation agreements and disposition and development agreements. And so that's fairly standard terminology that's in all plans, and that again will be found in section 300. Section 400 of the plan, which starts on page 22, identifies the public rights of way in the project area and also the current and applicable zoning. It really also indicates that to the extent development is occurring within the project area, all of that development is going to rely on the city design and entitlement process and procedures. And then we get to section 500, which sets forth the revenue allocation financing provisions, and that starts on page 26. So section 501 identifies the different methods of financing the project, including the use of revenue allocation funds. Then section 502 is the revenue allocation financing trigger, which talks about that to the extent this project area stood up on or before December 31 of 2020, the base year is retroactive to January 1, 2020. On page 28, we get to section 502.1, which is where the economic feasibility study is introduced, and it identifies the consultants that have prepared that study as Kirschlawn Associates and SMR Development. And as indicated, Phil and his team have prepared an economic feasibility study and have presented several options for you to consider today. And Phil, do you want to start here? Do you want me to get to the end of the
chat? I guess just finish the overview and then.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead with this? Yeah.
Okay. So on page 29, on there's the 10% limitation test, it's in section 502.3, so you can see where what the adjusted base values are for your 2002 project area as well as 10 mile, and then the anticipated base value of the Union District. The assessed values from January 1, 2019 have been used because obviously the values for 2020 have not been set yet. On page 32, section 502.7, this is the section that addresses the impact on other taxing districts and sets forth the levy rate. On page 33, there's the list of the overlapping taxing districts for the 16 acres as well as their levy rates as of their 2019 levy rates. We have excluded the levies that don't generate revenue flow into the agency. So the total levy rate that would be applicable to any increment would be 0.0072. The area below it that's highlighted, that will be modified following the discussion held on the economic feasibility study and the potential options. We'll put some additional detail into that section that clarify the assumptions that were made in the study. Section 600 on page 34 addresses the role and relationship between the city and the agency and just the ability to work together and what that may look like. There's no intent to bind the city to any of this list. It's just an example of how they work together. This language, I believe, is consistent with your other plans. And then section 800 on page 36 addresses the duration of the plan. This is a 20-year plan, so the termination date is December 31st, 2040. The Idaho Code 502905 subsection 7 allows the agency to take revenues in the year following termination, and so that reference has been added. It's generally acknowledged in the text of the plan that any obligation under an OPA would terminate as of December 31, 2040, so there wouldn't be any anticipated revenue directly flowing to any developer participant in 2041. And then below that, it sets forth a little bit greater detail about the termination process. Section 900 addresses the procedure for amendment or modification in this new post-July 1, 2016 world and the impact of the base reset. And with that, you have the attachments that follow. Attachment 1 is the map. Attachment 2, again, is the boundary description. It's the same boundaries as the de-annex area. Attachment 3 discusses properties which may be acquired by the agency. This plan doesn't anticipate or identify with specificity any parcels that will be are intended to be acquired by the agency, but it does identify some acquisition that could occur by use, such as if you need to assemble some parcels or if you need to buy a little bit more right away. So that's the intent of attachment 3. Attachment 4 is simply a document that we would need to pull from the comp plan. And then attachment 5 is the economic feasibility study. And so with that, are there any questions to the plan before I hand it over to Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. I thought it might be useful to kind of give an overview of the approach that I've taken here and then delve into some of the issues that we'd like to have some dialogue and concerns about. What I've done is first set about trying to define a legitimate estimate of the revenue allocation yield that's going to occur in the next 20 years. And in doing so, I use a number of assumptions. And I'm trying to forecast those and list those in the document so that you knew what I was thinking as I ran these spreadsheets forward. One of the things that I do is I take the existing values of the properties in the district, and I will apply an inflationary factor to those, and I inflate the land at 1%, and then per year, and the improvements at 2%. I've done that in 10 miles and so forth in other districts around the state, and that's proven conservative. And I certainly do approach these things on a conservative basis because we always want to bring you good news or good bad news down the road sometime. Then the other thing that I have done is, given the fluctuation in valuations and tax rate over 20 years, I've just basically held the tax rate constant, recognizing that as it might go down, the inflation or new construction might be a little higher. So generally, dinner times will wash out in terms of an average 20 years. So I just retain that tax rate as constant through the life of the plan. Then I'll go in and I'll determine in some manner when and how much taxable investment will be included in the district and over the life of the plan. Sometimes that's easier than others. This is not too bad because you have somebody who's got a plan. So in this one, I've worked with Felina, and they've given me basically two tranches of significant capital investment in the district. One right soon and another one following after it, for a total of about $125 million in the next 5 years, basically. And then recognizing how we pay taxes in Idaho, we bring that yield a year later than when the taxable property comes on the rolls. So that produced, using those scenarios, an income of about $18 million. The project list that we have developed totals in terms of infrastructure improvements and dedication of money to the community center that has been a high priority for the community is about $15 million. $3 million of that comes from a contribution from the city, so the revenue allocation is going to have to carry a burden of about $12 million. And so if you look at, you're going to produce $18 million, we've set aside an amount for agency administration through the district. So there's a net amount of about $17 million something that would be available to support capital investment in the district. So that kind of works. You got more money than you have out of it, like that. One of the things I did is test my assumption about that 1% and 2% value growth, because my tax bill at home certainly hasn't looked like that. And so I did just that. I had like 12 years of my tax bills at home. I ran those, and it was significantly higher than that. And then I said, that's interesting. Let's take some commercial properties in Meridian. I did that, and it came out just about the 1% and 2%. So it wasn't, over a 20-year average. That's not an overly conservative or an overly generous allocation. So given the nature of forecasting, I kind of stepped back and said, let's just keep that number as it is. And so pretty confident that using the historic methodology that we used here and in other places in the state, project is feasible. Then thinking about some of the issues that Mr. Trillingham was talking about earlier, is that constant tax rate a reasonable thing to do in looking at conservative forecasting numbers? And so in our team, we kind of kicked around, should we take another look? And so I went through and I took a 10% reduction in that tax rate, carried that flat through the term, and then let's get really conservative and do a 15% reduction. And that obviously reduced the number quite a bit. And so I think the 10% yield is about 16 million and 15 about 30 million before you take the diversion for district operations. So what in looking at it, we thought maybe like one of the recommendations from us, and we talked to the partners at Galena, we think the 10% is a reasonable forecast at this point as to what could happen on an average basis over the next 10 years. It's probably more than it's going to happen in the short term, but again, with our friends in the legislature having conversation, we just don't know what that number would be. So we think that 10% number is a good middle ground to understand where we're going. And in recognizing that we're looking at the improvements that are going to be provided to be provided by the developer and funded through an open station agreement with reimbursement through the activity of the revenue allocation formula, the risk basically is on them. And so hopefully we have a discussion about the three options that we presented to you. They're all in there in terms of how the cash flow works and then what the net results are. The other thing I did is I took the annual estimated revenue from the revenue allocation and again, I deducted the amount for administration, which I capped at $50,000 a year, and then allowed 80% of that balance or of the revenue allocation to be available for reimbursement under the OPA to the developer. That produced an increasing amount of cash carryover in the district, but it got pretty big. And so what I included was that, you know, there's a number where you're needing to cover unanticipated issues. And I capped that number at $500,000 as your ending balance through the life of the district and provided for additional principal payments where there was additional resources available at the discretion of the board. So trying to give you as much flexibility in the process as I could. This is exactly the process that I brought to you for 10 Mile. And so that seems to be working out okay there. But again, all of this, and that too was subject to the negotiation and the participation between the district, the agency, and the developer. So again, I'm going to talk a little bit about the assumptions and then challenge me on those, and happy to discuss that. And then if you concur with option B being the 10% reduction in the tax rate carried forward, we'll go back and amend the documents to reflect that direction. But I think it's important that you kind of get your fingerprints on it at this point while the concrete's still a little bit. So with that, I'll hopefully that's given you enough to stuff that you want here, and I'll be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
I think it's a lot for us to chew.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I would just remind everybody our OPA agreements. 10 Mile we negotiated where it's a 90% reimbursement. We retain 10%. Most of our others are 75%. So we do have the ability, as Phil mentioned, to negotiate. So we can figure out what that number would be, but I think the assumption is okay at this point in time. But just to remind you, that's kind of where we are, between 75 and 90%, just depending on what the project is and the amount of resources and energy that this board and the administration between myself and legal counsel needs to put into that as well.
And I think this district would be similar to 10 Mile in that it wouldn't be
fairly self-sufficient,
yeah.
I would think. The biggest challenge has been just figuring out the reimbursement process, and I'm hoping through 10 Mile we have at least got a process down enough, because that was painful this first go round in terms of, because property lines change there, and so in terms of being able to track the increment, especially with ownership changes, has been extremely difficult when you don't have a willing partner in the county to be able to help you do that. But I'm hoping this is a much condensed, more condensed property and project that we won't have that issue.
And just to be clear too, the revenue that's generated by the new district, we probably wouldn't have funds to contribute to other projects like some of the other things we're considering on the agenda today.
Potentially, yeah, that's correct. Yes.
So it'd really be focused just
on its own.
District, the improvements that are going in.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the numbers are very, very, very conservative.
Very, very, yeah. Yes. But the goal of the plan would be to keep it within that district. So do you need anything from us?
I guess if I could ask for one answer is concurrence that the 10% reduced tax rate is the number that you'd like to see brought back. If you think that's overly conservative, then we'll figure out something else. If you think it's not conservative enough, we've got a lot of conversation to have with a lot of people.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I think the 10% is a reasonable number to work with, just giving the chaos in the legislature right now and not knowing exactly how all of this is going to play itself out. I would rather us be as conservative as possible and then come out look like the heroes, you know, at the end of it.
I saw a
bit
shaking on that.
Unless you guys know how to control this legislator, that's probably a good idea.
For my success ratio on that, probably not
something. So I think that's your answer.
Yeah. I think we thank you for time and for your involvement. I think it's really important that sort of at this point, get early on, you unfortunately have to dive into the weeds a little bit more than you might like. I think ultimately this is your document and you're going to have to feel comfortable coming out the other end. And then thank you for your attention.
Thank you guys for your work. I know this is quick and fast and we appreciate it very much.
Commissioner Vassalone.
Quick question. I don't see a resolution or any kind before us today. So what are the steps going forward, Phil, I guess, and what actions are going to be needed?
Commissioner Vassalone and Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Vassalone, as we mentioned in the very beginning, this is the review of the draft. We're going to take any comments that this board may have today. I'm going to combine it with my comments and Todd's comments. We'll get that back over to the team so they can look at that. Hopefully we'll have a dialogue back and forth prior to our executive committee meeting next Tuesday, and then we can finish out the final edits at that point. Have it back in front of this board the second meeting of this month. The date is
as a resolution,
yes. And then we would forward that and transmit that on to the City Council for their approval.
Great.
On the April 16th date.
Good. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Now on to the fun stuff, the Conference on Broadway 2020 presentation by the City of Meridian Parks. Thanks for waiting us out and having to listen to all that. if you would please introduce both of yourselves.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, my name is Garrett White. I'm with the City Parks and Recreation Department, and I'm the Recreation Manager.
My name is Bobby Belknap. I am the new Arts and Culture Coordinator.
We're here to talk to you guys today, obviously, about Concerts on Broadway. Little history is this is the first time Concerts on Broadway is under the Recreation and Parks, or Parks and Recreation Department's umbrella. Before, it was all done through what you guys have heard from Hillary Blackstone, mm-hmm. Who came here last year and has been running Concerts on Broadway for the last several years. We are new to the game. When I say new to the game, it's now our apartment and we are learning a lot. Audrey has been with us now for a month,
2 months.
2 months. So we are drinking from the fire hose, but at the same time, we're pretty confident what's going on. Audrey's been doing a really good job of getting everything organized, so I'll turn it over to her.
Yeah, so So I've only been here for 2 months, but as I've been doing my research and learning about the commissions, I work with both the Meridian Arts Commission and the Historic Preservation Commission. And so I've run into a lot of projects that I know that MDC has made contributions to and been big supporters. So I'm glad to finally meet you. But like Rick said, we're here to talk about projects on Broadway. From my understanding, Hillary was here last June and requested that MDC keep $10,000 in its budget for the annual contribution that has been made to Concerts on Broadway. And I'm here to give an update, kind of finalize that sponsorship. So we will have 3 concerts this summer, from the end of August to the end of September. Those 3 dates are August 26th, September 12th, and September 29th. They are all Saturdays, and it's every other week over a 4-5 week period. And the 2 main pieces of feedback that we have heard from last year's concert series was to move it back to evening times and to switch up the bands. So we're implementing changes to those 2 areas to see if we can improve our concert series. If you remember last year, they kind of experimented with moving the concert series to the fall in the afternoon. But we noticed that the concerts are more successful in the more summertime in the evening. So we're moving back to that. Each concert will be at 7 o'clock, and if we have an open area, it will be at 6:30. We haven't finalized any bands yet, but I have informally reserved the Kings of Swing for September 12th. And we're looking for new bands that we haven't seen in a handful of years or that we haven't had before to fill the other 2 slots. We're trying to stay in our niche of upbeat, danceable, jazzy, swing kind of feel, because the audience seems to like that. So if you have any ideas on your bands, more than willing to hear them. But we're going to implement changes for those things. And since we're pulled through to the project, those are the clear details that we've kind of got settled so far. But
Audrey, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Yes.
More to say. But that 6:30 to 7 time period before the band comes on, when the professionals come on, we've had student musicians, and my experience, they've been exceptional. And I know one of the things, and sorry that Tammy isn't here, because she always pushed student involvement in the city, both in terms of the art wraps that are going on all our boxes, our student art, the student performers that perform before the concerts on Broadway, students in the farmers market. Are we still going to try to keep students involved in some way?
Yes, I am. I have been working really closely with Kara Stone, who has been our production manager for the last several years, and she has told me how they found these students. The Meridian Symphony has a competition, our annual competition. I don't know all the details, but that's usually where they pull their students from, so I'm going to try to do the same thing and keep that tradition going, because it seems to be a success.
Yeah, and we have both public and private resources for that. We have, obviously the West Ada School District music departments have been very supportive, but also TJ, who has the, who's on the Downtown Business Association board.
Yeah.
He has student musicians who perform as well. I mean, there are a number of good student musicians around, which I hope we're tapping into. And also my comment is, we have Lori Jones here. Lori's been a prime sponsor of concerts on Broadway through her business for years. So we want to certainly recognize Lori and her contributions.
Absolutely. We have been in contact, and I recognized you as you walked in, so I was going to introduce myself. So
great.
Thank you for that. And thank you for your comments, and we'll definitely try to keep those students coming back.
And I'm very much, as an old person, I'm in favor of the evenings, because the sun goes down behind the city hall in the summertime, and it makes it very pleasant for being out there. Middle of the day, not so much.
That's some of the feedback that we've heard, so we're going to go back to that. So
thanks, Audrey.
Hopefully it'll make it more enjoyable, but those are the very details that we've had, and we're grateful for MDC's contribution, and it's been very valuable to the success of the concert series so far, so I hope we can see a review on another season.
I'm excited to see who you might get for your other acts.
impact on the effect of the event, you know, how successful the event is when you get good lively bands that people are energized and want to come see. It'll bring more people down.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, in your packet is the fiscal year 20 Concerts on Broadway agreement. Todd has reviewed this and has given his approval for this. It mimics prior year's agreements. So if there's no questions moving forward, we could have Victor read the resolution and have a discussion.
Are there any questions from board members on it? If not, why don't you go ahead, Victor?
Mr. Chair, this is resolution number 20-006, a resolution of the Board of Commissioners of the Urban Renewal Agency of Meridian, Idaho, approving the memorandum of agreement attached here to as Exhibit A for financial support for concerts on Broadway between the Meridian Development Corporation and the City of Meridian and Idaho Municipal Corporation, authorizing the execution of the agreement by the chairman or the vice chairman and secretary, authorizing any technical changes to the agreement, authorizing the administrator to take all necessary action required to implement the agreement, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. We have a motion.
I move that we approve resolution number 20-006 as read into the record by council, and that we support Concerts on Broadway.
A motion by Commissioner Bastalone and a second by Commissioner McCarville for discussion. Now we'll do a roll call vote. Commissioner Mueller?
Aye.
Commissioner Vlasic?
Aye.
Commissioner Bastalone?
Aye.
Bless you. Commissioner McCarville?
Aye.
Commissioner Bevan?
Aye.
And for the record, Commissioner Byrne left about 5 minutes ago.
I got it.
Commissioner Fitzgerald?
Aye.
I didn't forget you anymore. And I'm an aye as well. So the resolution. Thank you very much. We look forward to the event.
Thank you.
All right, on to the facade agreement with the library district. Ashley, do you want to take this one?
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I am sad to report that we are not going to be able to move forward on this item. One of the things we did not take into consideration when we reviewed this application is the 2016 legislative statute that says if there is any urban renewal dollars that are contributed to a project that's over $1 million, it has to go to a public vote. Now, it has gone to a public vote, not necessarily including urban renewal dollars at that time. It went to went out to the public back in May of 2019. It passed. The challenge is we cannot check the box because we can't, based on how this statute reads, it has to meet the requirements of city electors. The challenge is that the Meridian Library District goes outside of city limits. The precincts do not mimic city limits boundaries. We have no way to be able to certify that 60% of the voters within the city limits voted for this levy. Without being able to certify that, we have no capability of being able to put a single dollar into this project without risking our entire TIF for our downtown district. We have thrown a lot of Hail Marys this week trying to figure out a way around this, and we simply can't get there. We have communicated with the library district. They have been very gracious and understanding, but unfortunately our hands are tied in this due to unintended consequences of poorly written legislation. This is one of those things in the interim committee, if we have the chance, I'd like to fix somehow. I don't know how many of these sort of scenarios would present themselves, but again, this is the perfect example of what urban renewal should be doing. This building is blight. We are contributing to the vitality of our downtown. Unfortunately, we can't.
Thank you. don't have anything to consider today, but I think it's important that we let the library district know that we're excited to have them downtown and you know, if there's other ways we can assist them with their reopening of that, we're all ears.
And that is exactly that next step. So what I have offered to do with library district, they are going to start looking for some sponsorships for different areas of the project, and partnerships with tech companies and other businesses that would align with what they do. If you have any companies that, and MFI would be top of my list, Commissioner Mueller, and looking and allowing to find those partnerships to maybe find some financial contributions. One of the things we did look at is, you know, is there, are there any financial contributions contributing to their overall budget of $1.2 million so we could ultimately get the public dollar number under $1 million in order to contribute. And unfortunately, they're not going to know what that might be until the very end. And so that was the other option we tried as well too. But if we can find opportunities to help with funding for this, because I know that Gretchen is extremely concerned that the budget numbers that they do have right now are too low based on what construction costs are today. She wants to be able to move this project forward sooner than later if the bids come in much higher than they're expecting, they may delay the project and opening. And so I think we all certainly would love to see that happen sooner than later for our downtown. I'm full of good news today. I'm sorry, guys.
Asher, can you refresh our memories on this? Because it was the law we talked about a couple of years ago that in terms of using urban renewal for public facilities and all that, what was the base amount that they had in the law that said that triggered it?
$1 million. So if a total project cost is over $1 million, then if there is a single dollar from urban renewal that's placed into that, it has to go to a public vote. And they did. I mean, the good news is they did.
There was no proration in the law in terms of percentage coming from different agents?
No, the challenge is the way the law was written, the legislation was written, and having sat through that interim committee all summer and then through all the legislative hearings, the intention initially was is that if urban renewal put in $1 million or more, that would trigger the public election or the public vote, for that project. The way, unfortunately, it has been interpreted is that it's a project cost of $1 million. So it doesn't matter what portion urban renewal is, it is, if there's a single urban renewal dollar that's placed into a project of $1 million or over, you have to go that public vote. And again, it did. It's just we have no way to certify that result for the city.
Can the city of Meridian contribute to that project? Could we contribute to the city of Meridian and then the city of Meridian contribute?
No. Again, we jeopardize our entire TIF. Look at the attorneys taking his
head.
Is that a legal term?
Yeah,
that's non-verbal. Off the record.
So unintended consequences, guys, elections matter.
Who we elect matters.
Yes, it does.
Well, I know you've already told them, but thank you for all their efforts in preparing that. It was one of the best facade improvement grant applications we've seen, and a lot of their time and energy went into putting that together, and we appreciate them for that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, in your packet is the latest weekly updates since our last meeting. As you can see, they're busy. Street closures and working on underground utilities. We had our monthly meeting after our last board meeting, and unfortunately, other than one attendee, we didn't have anyone show up. So at the MDBA meeting a couple days later, I let the downtown businesses know. I said, you know, we'll do this one for one more month, but if no one shows up, we're gonna put the kibosh on this, because this is for you guys. It takes a lot of our team's time between Pacific Companies, Josh, the city, and our resources. So we'll see if March is better attended, and I hope it is, because I think these are very beneficial for businesses in downtown. But again, it's, if they're not interested in attending, it's not worth continuing.
I think there hadn't been a lot of disruptions until recently, and so that, you know, could maybe it'll bring trigger people, and that's the whole point of having those meetings, is to explain the disruptions and try and work with people. So hopefully no one does show up, because that means everything's going great.
I don't think that's necessarily the case, but. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, in your packet are our continuation of our meeting notes that we actually have a meeting in 10 minutes today, every Wednesday, with the team. As you heard, the Meridian City Council approved the feasibility study, the eligibility study last evening unanimously. So, and with the discussion today, we're on track to be able to stay within that, by that June 30th deadline of approving both the de-annexation and the revitalization plan for the new urban renewal district. We're still working out the details specific to the civic project, as I've spoken with most of you regarding this. We've given feedback to the team in terms of there needs to be some level of increment that is generated on the civic block, and so it's in Galena's hands at this point. To come back to us with some concepts and ideas that they may have. So I will keep you informed as those discussions move forward.
All right, we're coming to the committee.
On the back page of your packet, board members, is the upcoming committee meetings. As I mentioned, every Wednesday at 9, we're meeting with Galena and the city. We have our parking and property committee meeting next week, MDBA board meeting this week, and the Chamber Excellence, Economic Excellence Luncheon is tomorrow. For those who are attending, Dr. Marlene Trump from BSU will be the speaker. So it should be really good.
Ashley, any interesting topics coming up for the parking property committee meeting?
I don't have anything other than just updates at this point, and just kind of depending on what those might look like and what that attendance might be. It may end up being canceled just depending on where we are, but I'll work with Steve on that and we'll make that determination.
The weather's getting nice, so I might get out.
Oh.
I love all those extra meetings.
Nothing to report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Administrator's report?
I think I'm finished. Thank you.
Literally.
Yeah, maybe.
Chairman's report, I don't have anything to add. Public comments, any members of the public wish to add anything? I would like to point out this was one of our well-attended meetings from the public standpoint. I mean, a lot of people were involved in presentations, but it's nice to see people show up to the meetings. It adds energy and makes our jobs a little bit more fun, so we appreciate having you guys here. Adjourn the meeting, because we have a motion to adjourn. I'm going to give that to Nathan. Is there a second? Okay, so motion by Commissioner Mueller and a second by Commissioner Bassalone. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That sounded unanimous. We are adjourned.
Thank you.